Drive Team is back after a whole 7 days with the best in chat, guests and audio delights on Siren 107.3 FM.
I still think you undersold that a little bit.
They didn't pay that guy enough.
It's very true. We've also been joined by the fabulous Phil Hamlin-Williams, who's going to be sharing microphones with yourself today, Malcolm, for a wee while at least. Phil, who has produced a whole range of things and is the maestro behind the upcoming Lincoln Book Festival. We are literally just weeks away from this revolution, Phil Hamlin-Williams.
We are, absolutely. I think it's less than 4 weeks now. It's very exciting.
That's right. And we'll find out more about that as the programme proceeds. But before we head into that, it's fair to say that Anna Lewis, in London, what's the weather like?
Not very nice. Very grey, overcast, and it's not summery at all. That's it. It looks like summer's over, I'm afraid.
This, of course, is the place through which Florence Langhorne will be returning in about 2 or 3 hours from now, actually, because you'll be heading back there en route to Brighton. Is that not the case?
Yes, I think so, aren't we? Yes.
Heading back through London. It's amazing. It's astounding. But as a wonderful English literature graduate and postgraduate soul with a historical bent, I'm sure, Anna, you'd be fascinated to find out about some of the activities that England has actually been producing, particularly at the University of Lincoln, specifically with respect to the older readers' 21st century literature book group. You see, Amy, I said I'd mention it, and I've already given it three shameless plugs in the opening moments of this whole thing. As well as, of course, your current research, which actually one of our studio team, who's a silent one at present, she actually said, oh, that sounds exactly like myself, women's old age in the 19th century. And she was saying, actually, I'm a 19th century person. Share with us a little bit about the women's old age in the 19th century, because after all, it did occur. People did actually, from the distaff side, actually get chronologically gifted.
Yes, thanks, Alex, and thanks for mentioning our book group as well. Yes, I mean, my research is on kind of life writing by women of the late 18th and early 19th century, so I'm particularly interested in reading other people's diaries, really, and letters and autobiographies and biographies. And it occurred to me while working with those sources that they're really rich in terms of offering insights into late life, in a period that seems both very familiar and also quite strange in terms of our own responses to old age. So my most recent work has been looking at the different kind of metaphors that people use to talk about the ageing experience in the 19th century, how women thought about their bodies, memories, kind of travel, a sense of place, different kinds of themes in relation to ageing. And I think the diaries bring a brilliant way of capturing ageing as it's experienced in flux rather than a sort of looking back on your early life. So that's what I've been doing in the archives, looking at a whole range of different women and their experiences of late life. At the same time, I've been bringing some of those sources out of the archive and talking to older Lincoln readers. We've had our Lincoln Older Readers Book Club, which reads 21st century literature, and that's been going about 5 years as a community reading group.
Just
but now they're reading.
Interjecting briefly,
too.
How old or experientially enhanced do you have to be before you can become an older reader? I mean, are we?
Well, our book group, and they would, you know, have things to say about this themselves, I suspect. Was originally formed through working with Age UK Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to their book group and talked to them about what they would like. And their definition is 55 years and above.
55 years.
I think our readers are all 60 years and above.
But 60.
The nature of definition is quite a complex question, both in the 19th century and in terms of contemporary definitions also.
So anyway, I mean, from that perspective, there's at least one person in the studio who's far too young to be classified as an older... Well, actually, two, including yourself, Amy.
Thanks.
You know, I think it's... possibly three, but I mean...
Rose is looking a bit shocked.
You know, Phil, I think possibly, you know, we'll have to just rethink the revolution side of things, our perspective. It's an interesting answer. Anna, any questions or thoughts you'd like to put to Amy about research and indeed the whole concept of becoming more chronologically gifted as a woman in the 19th century?
I'll tell you what, because when I did my master's degree, we kind of diversified in various areas. There were six of us that graduated at Canterbury that year, and one of the people that was on the course with me was looking at Thomas Hardy and mirrors. And I know it sounds very weird, but the role the mirror plays is quite complex, and I just wonder whether that's, you know, when people perceive themselves as an active person, they don't think of the mirror, but when you look into a mirror, and you're describing what you see, that's when the realization of who you are, what you are, and your aging process. So I wonder if any diaries that, you know, have ever mentioned anything about looking at oneself, because I think that's quite telling, personally.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. And actually, there's been lots of interesting work on the use of the mirror in literary representations of aging that are much more contemporary, you know, 20th century women's aging. But actually, it's striking that there is none of that in the sources that I read, because there might be sort of satirical prints of older women looking into to mirrors. But actually, within the diaries themselves, that idea of looking at your kind of physical reflection isn't something I've seen so far. There is, however, I suppose, more reflection on how other people see you, you know, perceptions of me as an older woman, and putting yourself in the position of observers and describing yourself. So that sort of mirror effect, but not any kind of...
physically.
No. And actually, discussions about sort of women's ageing and beauty are far more... seen in sort of satirical and comic modes in literature and prints, rather than they are in actual individuals' personal reflections, where it seems much more subjective and much less external and physical, I would say.
It's going to be problematic for the Facebook generation, isn't it? All that FaceTime thinking, I'm getting old, look at me, I'm getting old. Or is that just a case of paranoia creeping in?
Well, I think so. You can archive images now on Facebook, can't you? So it is a kind of visual record of the ageing.
For instance, if we turn around here, we see back in August the 20th, 2012, where Malcolm Tomlinson, Eleanor Tomlinson, Derek Thompson are actually at an injured jockeys event, where Malcolm was actually riding a horse, I believe, that day. He looks exactly the same to me, really.
That I look like Prince Philip in that photo. I'm so thin.
Well, it's worthwhile sort of getting it. And yes, as you can see there, Florence, it is indeed from Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging.
Just my absolute favourite film of all time.
Once again, Malcolm, I feel as I've done that little bit of happiness by sort of connecting folk together. How is Eleanor these days, by the way?
She's really well, thanks, Alex. Yeah, she's off to Cornwall to start filming again in September, final series of Paul Dunn.
Is she being paid the same as Aidan these days? No, best not go there. Best not go down that route.
Not go there.
Not after the brouhaha was caused in the Times.
She had a lot of advice from Dad after that. So.
Yes. I'm not surprised. Anyway, Anna. Any other final thoughts or questions or queries you'd like to put? I know, what have you been hunting out this week?
This week's been fairly tame. I haven't felt on top of the world this week. I felt very kind of in hibernation. The weather's just been so foul. But I've just been doing recces of different areas like Teddington that I haven't been to for a while. And they're very cultured, the people of Teddington. They have reading groups. They have lots of kind of gatherings for quizzes. Teddington's shone, actually. I think Teddington's a nice little place to be if you live in that area. It's very cultured and very kind of, you know, community spirited.
Strange, Anna, when I was there with you in the 1980s, I didn't get that sense of culture in Teddington going to wear together. It was more kind of the home of Benny Hill and Thames Television. But I mean, it's obviously changed. Gentrified, I think, is what they call it these days.
Yeah. Possibly.
It's a thought. Malcolm, this is the critical part. I know Phil's like a greyhound in the slips, keen to rush into those last two questions, but I feel you can keep the standard going, because let's face it, Malcolm, you're one of only three people in the studio who did these shows in the 20th century. Everybody else is a 21st century newbie to this whole sort of experience. Apart from Anna, of course, who was indeed a 20th century girl. There we are.
That is very daunting.
So would you like to take them away, please, as Anna begins to head off into the sunset? Please.
And I'd love to ask you about the pub in Isle with that lovely white one on the river, but we haven't got time for that, I don't think. So
The London Apprentice, it is wonderful. It's a centre of all things wonderful in Isle. Beautiful pub, very old.
It is great, isn't it?
Lovely views. It's really nice. Yeah, recommend it highly.
But it's no Pope's Grotto, let's face it. Sorry, as I made clear last week, Pope's Grotto, not after Pope Francis or indeed Pope John Paul II, after Alexander Pope the poet. Easily confused. How often, you know, you've been going to a Vatican service and you thought, so where's the poetry?
I have no idea what Alex is talking about. He's gone completely off on a tangent. But have you enjoyed your telephonic chat, Anna?
I have indeed. Thank you very much for asking.
And will you come back and do it again?
It would be great. Yes, I'd love to. Thank you.
And meanwhile, your reward from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Thank you.
softly blows, oh lullaby bay. It fills the sails of boats that are waiting, waiting to sail your worries away. It isn't far to hush by mountain, and your boat waits down by the quay. The winds of night so softly are sighing, soon they will fly your troubles to sea. So close your far away from Lullaby Bay. So close your
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Always thought it was important to do the Eleanor Thomas and William Coles remix for the moment there. As I know, William, you're always keen to actually have your ident run over a particular classic tune, particularly when it's sung by a midweek driver who has indeed been, she has been in the studio as well. No, exactly. Well, she'd return one of these days.
Oh, of course.
Exactly. Or maybe not. I don't know. William Coles in Edinburgh. How are you, sir?
I'm very perky. How are you?
Perky is an adjective which I feel is vastly underused these days. And personally, Amy, I'd like to recommend it's introduced to English curricula, certainly for postgraduate students, that we should look for perky people.
Yes, well, I'm very happy to.
As one of the perkiest we've actually got. It's fantastic. It's genius stuff on that basis. William, if you've looked at the schedule, you might see in the studio we have the fabulous Florence Langhorne, first class honours graduate from City University London. Yeah, round of applause, please, for Florence. And now she's entering the real world, taking those first delicate steps. And for some bizarre reason, Florence, apparently somebody closely related to you actually suggested I was a person to speak to. Unbelievable.
great contact to have, Alex.
Well, it was a very pleasant lunch and a delightful to connect with you.
I really enjoyed it.
I know you're looking to possibly work in London, but there's always Edinburgh. I mean, you know, it is a capital of Scotland, and the likelihood is there'll probably be a separate part of the whole Isles before too long, certainly after
like
March next year.
Or not, I don't know.
Exactly. Malcolm Tomlinson is with us, of course, Malcolm, who could share some thoughts with you, William, about the Top Draw Theatre Productions, when indeed we used to be fellow travellers in the thespian arts, I believe, Malcolm.
We did. Yeah, we did the odd little gig together, Alex.
And they were indeed quite odd. But, you know, whether we were entertaining BP executives in Colchester, always a thrill, or indeed doing the Humberside milieu of the country club, looking just for life, the universe, and the meaning of everything, really.
You must give us your American accent later, Alex, because I remember you perfected that.
Do you think so? Even to the extent some BP executives thought I genuinely was a citizen of the colonies.
That was the highlight, wasn't it?
Well, Yes, I like to feel there were many. We've also got, of course, the fabulous Phil Hamlyn-Williams, as we've said. The Lincoln Book Festival is approaching very, very closely. We've already done a couple of pre-interviews, Phil, and let's talk a little bit about some of the highlights. What sort of things should we actually say if you've got one decision to make when you're living in Brighton, or maybe just about 15 miles outside, to return to Lincoln for the Lincoln Book Festival? This is some of the critical things that you should actually look for. And what sort of things can they look forward to this year, Phil Hamlyn-Williams?
Well, the one, if I had to choose one, it would be Lincolnshire born and bred Tracy Borman. Mm. Now, Tracy is interesting for a large number of reasons. She is joint chief curator of the historic Royal Palaces with Lucy Worsley.
Lucy's a good soul. I've done a few interviews with Lucy. She's a charming soul. And to me, Lucy Worsley is just, you know, an indefatigable historian. She tells it like it is. I don't know what, I mean, sometimes I think Lucy gets dressed up a little bit too much like Hilary Mantel. But other than that, yeah, it's all okay. Lucy Worsley, fun.
Yeah, brilliant.
Well, you see, with Tracy, we have the power behind the throne. Mm. So we have the serious historian who has her debut novel, The King's Witch. And she's coming to talk about it. And it's all about the gunpowder plot, which, as all of you will know, was plotted in Lincolnshire. Mm-hmm. So this is local girl telling a local story. And it's been very well received. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Looks like a treat. And it's going to be wonderful because, of course, social media will be starting up. So I believe some of our students will hopefully be involved with the social media.
They will indeed. They will be interviewing. They will be blogging. Mm-hmm. They will be taking photographs. You know,
it'll be all on social media. Really. Effectively, Florence, you can access social media and just go crazy on the whole thing, basically. As I'm sure you will, basically.
Absolutely. Sounds very good.
Florence very sensibly stays away from social media. She's a music graduate, so she gets something to do with social media for her. Very important.
Yeah. Worried about putting the wrong thing online.
and it's a very important caveat to actually engage with respect to social media. I mean, Amy, honestly, you had to change your name so often before you sort of just went wild on social media, really.
I barely know how to use it.
As so many 19th century scholars have actually said, they just, it's like crinoline and all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Alex, can I make a plug for social media?
Please.
On the biography I'm working on at the moment of a wonderful 19th century publisher's reader, I have used Facebook to contact potential audience, to potential buyers, but, you know, also more generally. And I have come across an absolute gem. Part of his family went to the Antipodes. Indeed, part of his wife's family ended up in New Zealand. And there she is in New Zealand with 60 letters written by this man's wife towards the end of her life. So, for your research, when these emerge, and she's got to go through them and type them out, but I just cannot wait to see those.
It sounds quite literally awesome. Wait. And, of course, we can go back to why the Antipodes were called the Antipodes, because back in the 12th and 13th century, Mappamundis and medievalism and so on, they literally thought the people on the opposite end of the earth, their feet reversed backwards, so they walked backwards, so they were antipodal. They were Antipodean. Well, let me say, Bill Coles, I don't actually drop in an occasional line from that. William, you've heard...
You keep on assuming my vast knowledge. I didn't know that, and I certainly didn't know that the gunpowder plot was hatched in Lincolnshire.
That's because you spent too much time working for Rupert Murdoch, but never mind. It's just a thought there. Sorry, Rupert, if you're listening, we love you as well, but still, never mind. Who would you like to chat to? Who I'll have a few words with before we head off to an Oslo-born singer-songwriter who's got a latest release coming up in a few moments' time.
I'd like to chat to Malcolm, the thespian, please.
Oh, hello, William. Fire away. I was in Edinburgh recently, William.
Yes?
I saw a show at the festival entitled Tilda Swinton Arranges a Date on Craigslist.
Brilliant.
Oh, right. Was it actually Tilda?
No, it was a bloke dressed up as a... But it was. I thought I'd hate it, but it was brilliant. It was really good.
So have you appeared in the festival? That's the question.
No, do you know, I never have. For whatever reason, it just hasn't happened. But I love going. It's such a fantastic atmosphere. And it seems to get bigger every year, William. I mean, you obviously live there, so you would know better than me. But I just think it's massive now.
Yes, and now it's all over and all the tourists have gone and everything is back to normal. Thank God.
Well, as you know, William, one of these days we will actually cross that border and visit you. I'm thinking, Malcolm, maybe we should do a double. We should actually restore that whole line of some on-location postcards from that point of view. After all, later on this week, we'll actually be performing at the York Maze, Europe's largest maze. Standing. Do you know what, William? Well, yes, carry on.
Yes, dear.
No.
Could you bring your show up here for 3 weeks? I mean, you know, do you think it might travel outside Lincolnshire?
Hey, we started in South London. If we can cope with South London, we can certainly cope with, you know, we've done Teesside. So, I mean, we're more than happy to go on the road. What say you, Malcolm?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. Florence?
Yeah, absolutely.
Amy?
Oh, we've been in Edinburgh, very nice.
English tutors, you see, they're so underpaid and undervalued, I feel, in so many ways. School of English and Journalism. Don't worry, Professor Jason Whittaker thinks very highly of you, Amy. Still good stuff. Marvellous. You're listening, Jason. It's very important. Do you know, it's time to actually put those last two questions to bed. I know, so much to pack in, but we do have to come to Liv Austin, and she is waiting to talk about a variety of other bits and pieces. So... go on, Malcolm, take it away. I think so.
William, have you enjoyed your telephonic chat?
I've not only enjoyed it, I've learned something about the gunpowder plot.
Yeah.
That Lincolnshire is this hotbed of revolution.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And Antipodean people walking backwards.
Yeah, that one too, yeah.
For Christmas as well, as Spike Milligan once said, I'm walking backwards for Christmas. It'll soon be with us, of course. Never
too soon. He's going off on tangents again, William. Are you going to come back and talk to us again?
Yes, just as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you.
Nor should you, je ne regrette rien, Liv Austin. Don't regret a single one. I think a round of applause. What say you, Malcolm?
Absolutely.
Yay! Oslo-born Londoner. Marvellous, that's what we like to hear. Liv Austin, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm really good. Thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, Liv, the video for Don't Regret a Single One, did you actually film that on the streets of London and in concert, or was it just a case of it's all CGI?
It's real in terms of not using any CGI, but we did put together a fake concert for the video.
Fake concert?
Yes, it was a Sunday morning.
Well,
had fans come down and jump around to the song about 100 times in a row. They were amazing. And I had a fever and had literally no voice, so it was definitely not a real concert.
Were they on their way home from a night out on Saturday?
I think a couple of them were, yeah. I had some friends turn up and I think they had just stayed out all night, which is sometimes the best way to do it.
Well, it's a way forward. I mean, that could, I surely wasn't a fake autograph you were giving as well, because that's a whole range of things from that point of view. So that
that girl was actually really sweet. She did want a real autograph.
Nice.
So I kind of scribbled something as we were shooting, but then she came back and she said, can I have a real one, please?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got to have something to put on Flogger in years to come. Never mind. Yeah. You could say Liv Austin is the artist who came to London for the drama but stayed for the music. Do you know, Florence, it could almost be yourself, really. You went to London from Brighton for the drama, but stayed for the music. Wow. To state that she made the right decision is turning into quite an understatement. Norwegian-born singer-songwriter arrived in the UK in 2010, it says here, Liv. 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And you were here to study acting.
That's right, yeah. I did 3 years of acting.
And whereabouts did you actually study the joys of acting?
It was at Guildford School of Acting.
Good
Surrey.
School. Good school, that's nice. Yeah, Guildford, yeah. Sorry, stockbroker belt, nice. Yeah. I'd like to say Lambda slightly better, but that's okay, you know. I would, you know.
We don't need to talk about that.
No, and it could be more chat issues, because she could have said E15, you know.
Oh, so, yeah, but they're a bit radical.
Yeah, exactly.
They are sent to Coventry quite literally. Sorry, E15. Liv Starr has been rising since she unveiled her Working Man's Dream EP in 2014, with what turned out to be perfect timing, in tandem with the extraordinary new wave of interest in all things Nashville. And I know that Tessa Snow, who sadly is obviously being too committed to work these days to be around. Don't worry, Sound and Country Vision will be on tomorrow. But would you like to share with us why country music and why Country Music Magazine has defined yourself, Liv, quite rightly, as one of the hottest properties on the British country music scene?
Wow, well, I don't really know how to... I'm still kind of blown away by that. I was really, really honoured that they wrote that about me in the beginning of the year, and I also kind of felt the pressure because I knew I had an album coming out later in the year, and I was like, okay, wow, now I really have to sort of live up to expectations. But I don't know, I think I've been really lucky with the timing and exactly the kind of music I'm doing and the more sort of poppy side of country. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but the people who love it are really getting into that kind of music now. So I just feel like the fans that I have got, they've been so supportive and really been behind me with every song that I've put out. So yeah, I don't know. I think I was just lucky with my timing.
Timing, it's not luck, it's talent, it's fortune, it's all sorts of things. Your story begins in the small town outside Oslo. It's almost like a movie is taking shape, I mean, in your mind here. Where, of course, you were born and where you were singing from as far back as she can remember. In the womb, Liv? Were you singing in the womb? Because sometimes you can get with these ultrasound techniques
maybe
you can have these days.
I think my mum was probably singing when I was in the womb.
Amy, did you sing to your child when they were in the womb?
Yes. I did.
You see?
And she's a keen singer now in her own way. So, you know.
So there we are. And how old is she?
She's a year and a half now.
Well, there we are.
And she likes her favourite current song is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Well, clearly, you know. Well, obviously, Eleanor Tomlinson should do a private concert.
I know, right? That would be great.
Thankfully, the podcast is there, so you can do a back announcement for us. Say, look what Mummy's just done for you, child. Sorry, I don't have her name, so...
Thea.
There we are. Anyway, back to Liv, because obviously you are on the phone, making your debut from that particular routine. You might not recognise the confident and engaging performer she's turned into from the tentative steps she took towards that career. You say, Liv, you are always a very shy child and will be at the back of the church choir. You didn't want to do solos.
That's definitely true. Yes, I was petrified of singing on my own or speaking in public or anything like that. So I don't really know what changed, but there was a time where I was very... very, very shy, and there was, you know, no way that I would be doing this as a profession. So, yeah, I've definitely changed since then.
Liv, you're from the land that brought us Morton Harkett and Aha. You have to have some positivity, you know. Very important on that routine. Remember, Morton's looking at you with pride and saying, go, Liv, carry the Norwegian torch.
I hope so.
It will happen. Liv, stay with us because, again, proving the ability and the multi-talented nature that she actually has, she's even done a radio ident to introduce her new upcoming single, which we're about to hear. We've played this, obviously, before on Siren. We're going to play it again. It has been recognised as a classic. Liv, you're happy to stick around and then open up to questions from the team about life, the universe, and indeed the tale of an Oslo-born singer who spent some time in Belgium. I know, it gets even better, Belgium, and is now in London. Will you stay with us?
I will absolutely stay with you, yes, of course.
Then cue the ident.
Hi, this is Liv Austin. You're listening to Siren Radio, and this is my new single, Window Shopping.
I'm not looking for a pretty face. Hot for the head's just empty space. Perfect hair, perfect teeth. Spends more time getting ready than me. Nothing more to say past the first day conversation. Might look good behind that glass, but it doesn't work like that. I gotta try you on. When you had all night long. Don't care if you're fit, just if we fit. If you wear Chanel, it's never been important what it says on the label. If your edge is frayed, I don't mind. That just makes you one of a kind. There's something I want more than just good conversation. Might look good at first sight, but that doesn't mean it's right. Hey, 'cause I gotta try you on. Where you at? Just if we fit up, to me you got it going on. If you give me a feeling so strong, I've got no hope in stopping, and I'm not gonna find that window shopping. No. Window shopping. I gotta feel the connection, feel the attraction. Won't get it from how you look, I get it from attention. Don't have to question, just know that you got me hooked. Gotta feel the connection, feel the attraction. Won't get it from how you look, I get it from attention. Don't have to question.
To look at. But I love him.
I gotta try you on. Where you at all night long? Don't care if you're fit, just if we fit up.
I think another round of applause. Yay! Suddenly a musical upbringing that embraced the joyful pop of Britney Spears and Hanson and the crossover country of Shania Twain and Carrie Underwood all made sense. The words of the Liv Austin website. But it's over to you, Florence, to take over the mantle of interviewing because first-class honours graduate in music. Music technology? Oh, it was the degree?
Yeah,
just music.
Just music, actually, yeah.
Just music. Film composer.
Started doing a little bit of film and television composition.
Violinist.
Slightly. Violin, piano.
Exactly. Multi-talented. In fact, in many ways, for the next album, Liv, you need to actually book Florence Langhorne now.
Oh,
I should just say
great.
That straight away.
That would
be great. But
yeah,
anyway.
Good tip.
Over to you, Flo.
Hi, Liv. How are you?
Hi.
I was just wondering, actually, I was wondering how you write your songs,
because I think it was in your video the next time that I watched, where you were playing piano and guitar in it. So I was just sort of wondering how you compose, sort of how you come up with ideas, and the sort of process you go through with it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it really depends on the song. I think my general thing that's happened most times is that I get an idea from something that happens in my life. And then just being in the mindset of a songwriter, I kind of keep, I get a sentence or, you know, just a phrase or a few words in my head and like kind of stick. So it feels like it's the lyrics that kind of come first. And it might be, for instance, with the next time, that was kind of the first thing that came up. I was in that with that song. It was a co-write with my friend Jessica Sharman, and we were sat there talking about this situation, and because this is a real life situation that it's based on, which is the same as with most of my songs. And I was talking about this person who'd let me down several times, and they were just terrible. And I just said, you know, they say they're going to do better next time, next time, next time. But they don't understand that was the next time, as in, like, you know, that was the last time. But it was just a new way of phrasing, like, that was the next time. You've used up your next time. And then we just looked at each other and we go, that's it. You know, that's where we start. And then we kind of start talking about what we want to say. And I am more of a piano player than I am a guitarist. So I think I tend to go to the piano more often when it comes to trying to find what chords I want to go for and stuff. But I'm playing more and more guitar, and I feel like it's natural for me to pick up either instrument depending on what kind of vibe I'm feeling that the song is going to be, or, you know, so it does depend. But I do feel like the lyrics, or especially, you know, a couple of lines or a chorus kind of come first before I even start playing an instrument at all. It kind of starts playing in my head.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then that, and then following that comes the sort of what style the song's going to be in, and you know, whether it's going to be more upbeat or you know,
exactly,
a bit more sad or whatever sort of.
Yeah, how,
so exactly. The lyrics guide it. Yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics definitely guide it, and sometimes I feel a bit like my life. If people were inside my head, they kind of experience my life as a bit of a musical, because I kind of get the line first, and then I start hearing the music, and I go, oh yeah, that's it, you know, and it starts playing. But nobody else can hear it, obviously, so I need to actually write it down. But yeah, so that's kind of how it works.
That's really cool. That's really interesting. Yeah. So then, do you sort of use technology? Do you sort of record into sort of use Logic or any sort of different softwares or
I do. It really depends who I'm working with. If I'm working on my own, I do a pretty simple sort of demo in a, you know, GarageBand or something like that. And then if I'm working with one of my co-writers, we'll use Logic and just do like a really simple demo where we lay down, you know, a track of guitar or a track of piano, maybe some programmed drums or something, just to give an idea of the beat. And then I kind of just lay down some vocals, maybe some harmonies, and just have a really simple demo. And then I'll come into the studio with my producer and go, does this make sense to you? You know, or do you need to explain it more? And then we kind of start building from there.
Oh, that's really great. So thanks for that. I'm really excited to hear some more of your stuff, some more of your
songs. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I hope it all makes sense when you hear it.
It's been awesome. Malcolm, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. Hello, Liv. When you first came over, were you fluent in English, and were you on your own? Did your parents come with you, or were you just a scared person arriving in London?
Like somebody travelling up from Brighton to Lincoln.
Exactly.
I was definitely a scared person arriving on my own. Yes, I was very excited, a bit anxious, I'm sure, but. I did speak English. You know, we learn English in Norway from quite a young age. I think now they learn it from the first year in school, which was not the case for me because I'm older. But now they have it from the first year they start school, and so people start, you know, they learn really, really good English. The thing was, I did actually have an American accent. Because a lot of Scandinavians, you might know, will, you know, they watch TV, films, that's kind of how we learn English. And so so I kind of learned to speak from watching Friends, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I had, and listening to country music, you know, I didn't have a southern accent. I didn't take it that far. But, yeah, I kind of had an American accent. And I thought, this is kind of weird because I'm not American and I've moved to the UK, so I either have the option of like kind of trying to fade out my American accent, or I can just try and change it now. So I basically just tried to change my accent from the first day at drama school, and
right.
then kind of managed after a year or so.
They must have been, were they keen to help you do, they must have been quite keen to help you do that, were they?
Absolutely, yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, it was really, really helpful to be in drama school because you have so many people who will, you know, they are not afraid of criticizing you.
No.
So, you know, they'll tell you when it's not right. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So I did learn a lot from that, and I think if I'd just moved here and tried to do it on my own, it probably would have been a tougher job. So, yeah, they did help me a lot.
And when you're writing songs now, do you still sometimes think in Norwegian, or do you write it all in English?
I write it all in English. I've never actually... maybe since I was a kid, I've never really written a song in Norwegian in my life, and I never think of the lyrics in Norwegian. It kind of comes to me in English first. I feel like I, as much as you do think in language, if you do, I feel like I think in English. So, so the words that come to me, you know, as I spoke about just now, when I get like a line in my head, it's always in English, but a lot of people are challenging me to write in Norwegian, so maybe I'll do it one day.
Liv, you've done superbly well making a debut on the Midweek Drive today. We've heard window shopping. Don't forget, you can also go to livaustin.com. That's livaustin, A-U-S-T-E-N, .com to find out more marvellous things there. Presumably you're on the usual social media as well?
That's right. I'm pretty easy to find everywhere. Just livaustin, one word, on Twitter and Instagram and all of that. Yeah.
Well, Liv, three final questions. First of all, would you like over or the next time for your kind of little final précis today? I mean, are we going to go over or are we going to go to the next time? Next time, obviously, hopeful, because it suggests that there will be another time when we'll connect, because that's one of the other questions we need to ask you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I think we should go for the next time, because I would definitely love to have another chat with you guys. This is really fun.
You see, that's why Norway is so... That's why the Nobel Peace Prize sort of emerged, obviously, from the Scandinavian countries, you know. Liv, if you're able to actually take over either the Prime Minister's post or indeed President of the United States in the near future, I think the world would probably be a better place.
I'll do my best.
Yeah, well, it'll work through that. So, Liv, we will speak to you again in the very near future. Liv, for the moment, take care. Liv, for the moment. You see what I did there, Matt? I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It could be the title of your next album with, of course, musical contributions from Florence. It's wonderful.
Exactly.
It's the next time. It's Liv Austin on Siren Radio.
You weren't as shiny as Prince Charming, but you were good enough for a white knight. Oh, you had a smile so disarming, with eyes of green, your jealousy was covered by the twinkle in your eye. Was in your dungeon for a long time, but I became the villain in your lies. Now I found my way into the sunshine. I'm done with second guessing, and I'm done with one more try. You say you're easy going, but you're not. You keep holding on to something that ain't yours. You miss your calling. Easy going, easy gone. I can't help you move on. Third time around, a second chance. Just this once became a habit. Now I'm out of free passes. I tried to make it right. You're promising.
just this once became a habit. Now I'm out of free passes. I tried to make it right and give you a next time, but your promises ran out of truth. And you weren't there when I needed you. No, so this is goodbye. This was the next time. Oh, this was the next time. Oh, this was the next time. Bye, bye, bye. This was the next time.
It is. It'll happen. Of course it will. Because we can press this button here.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
Exactly. Annette Andre, welcome back to the Midweek Drive and your chance to actually meet telephonically, at least, the person who actually vocalised that ident for you back in the day, actor Malcolm Tomlinson. So there we are, Malcolm Tomlinson. You have a chance to say hi to Annette Andre in person.
Hi, Annette Andre. Great to meet you telephonically.
Hi, Malcolm Tomlinson.
I still remain to point out that the line you put on your website, Alex's show is a blast of fresh air in this increasingly digital pursuit of the trivial. I think I want that on my tombstone. I think that's it. You know, when I kick the oxygen habit, that's, you know, Amy, make note of that, you know, go.
Okay.
Yeah, a blast of fresh air in this increasingly digital pursuit of the trivial. Oh, we try. That's the important thing. In the studio, Annette, clearly keen to actually listen to the audio missive and, again, the excitement of the biography, the autobiography, which is available very soon. We have Florence Langhorne.
Hey.
First class honours graduate from City University in London. Very good indeed. And specialist in the violin and the piano, though not necessarily at the same time.
No, I haven't tried that yet.
It's a thought.
I'm going to try and do that.
Push that boundary, you know, a little bit of mash up there.
You'd make a fortune.
Exactly.
You'd make a fortune.
It's the way forward.
I'm going to try and make that a skill.
We have Dr. Amy Cully. Amy, you've been a leader. You are specialist in the 19th century. How would you define yourself, Amy?
Oh, I think a teacher and a researcher.
Teacher and researcher.
Writer. But in that order, exactly. Probably.
And your book, of course, which is available, is?
Oh, it's called British Women's Life Writing, 1760 to 1840, Friendship, Community and Collaboration.
Exactly. Buy it now for an early Christmas present.
I'm not sure it'll be piled high at Waterstones at Christmas, but there are some very interesting women in it who have some great things to say.
I see in many ways, which just reels with the title again, it is of course entitled...
Oh.
The title of the book?
British Women's Life Writing, 1760 to 1840.
That's fine. That's okay. That's British Women's Life Writing, exactly. I can see that coming in with, where have I been all my life? Annette Andre, your new memoir. Yes, it's finally, after many, many years, it's actually out there. It's sorted through. We can finally find out about all men. I mean, Annette, it's going to happen, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, I know.
Yes.
That's great. So what would you like to share with us in your audio missive from San Diego this month?
Well, okay, I've chosen two incidents from my memoir, Where Have I Been All My Life, and that I hope you'll find interesting. In my early 20s, I lived for a time in Rome, travelling from Sydney by steamer through the heat of the Suez Canal in the wake of a man I was head over heels with and whose wife I didn't know I existed. The young cabin boy showed us to our quarters on the lowest deck, the stenciled steerage emblazoned on the door, not preparing me for what lay within. There, in the space of a not overly generous walk-in closet, were two double-deck bunk beds, two small wooden closets, and a single portlight window. The cabin was next to the boiler room, the metal walls uncomfortably warm to the touch, and shivering around the clock with the thrumming sound of the engines housed just beyond. In an instant, my three roommates and I realized why our affairs had seemed so reasonable. This cubicle was to be our own floating devil's island for the next 6 weeks, 42 days and nights of heat and non-stop noise in the bowels of the fair sea. At the evening meal in the third-class dining room, my roommates and I assessed that the chances of surviving the voyage had decreased, as the first course A lukewarm, murky liquid was served with soggy croutons held aloft on the greasy surface. Fortunately, two of my fellow inmates, sisters in their early 20s returning to Italy, shared my gallows humour. In short order, the three of us were convulsing with laughter as we invented increasingly bizarre meals in store for us in the days ahead, as each of the next courses arrived and proved even more desperate in comparison to the mystery broth. Our fourth companion, who'd identified herself as Sylvia and remained silent thereafter, busied herself by hoovering everything that was placed in front of her with robotic movements. Never once did she raise her gaze from her plate of food or react to our gales of laughter. But that night put a nail in it. Even with the port light open, the cabin was stiflingly hot, and in a perverse sleepless moment, I found myself giving voice to the incessant din of the engines by translating their pounding into a gibberish repetition which sounded like hi-em-sh, hi-em-sh, hi-em-sh in an endless loop. I must have fallen into a light, exhausted sleep as I was disoriented when a sound reached me that was in counterbeat to the hi-em-sh of the engines, but just as rhythmic. After a few moments, I realized that it was coming from Sylvia in the bunk below mine. She was whimpering, pitiful, strangulated cries uttered in short bursts, and then a sigh of breath before the run began again. Sylvia, I said in a hushed whisper, are you awake? The whimpering continued in the same unbroken rhythm. She was asleep, but her unhappiness wasn't. Now, in addition to the stifling heat and unrelenting noise in the cabin, I could count on 41 more nights of enduring poor Sylvia's nocturnal tortures. Roger Moore and I remained close friends for over 50 years. Here is the start of that relationship on the set of The Saint, as I was about to shoot my first episode. Like so many happy endings in life, The Saint started off as a nightmare and ended up being my yellow brick road to everything I'd hoped for in those early days of dreaming what it would be like to be an actress. I had interviewed with John Gilling, the director of my episode, and while he seemed to be void of charm and rather filled with himself, nothing telegraphed the pit viper he was to become on my first day of filming. I arrived at the studio with my jitters at working with Roger Moore barely in hand. The Saint was an enormously important show for me, and I'd spent an almost sleepless night visiting all the calamities that could befall me in such a high-profile production. The first scene to be shot was a rather complicated master shot with Roger and I, two other actors, and involved several moves with large blocks of dialogue. If that wasn't daunting enough, at just past the crack of dawn, John Gilling announced that he wanted to do the scene in one take, so the moves we made and the dialogue had to be spot on. I had the first line when Gilling called action. The dialogue that tumbled out of my mouth sounded like I was speaking in tongues. God damn it, cut! Gilling roared. He shot out from behind the camera with blazing eyes, his face contorted. You idiot, six bloody words and you can't put them together. You're a disaster. Cast and crew stared in shocked disbelief at the violence of his tirade. The tears instantly whelmed in my eyes. He was bent over me, a foot or two from my face, when Roger calmly yelled out, John, a word, please. There followed a muffled exchange in a corner of the stage, and when Gilling returned, he took up his position beside the camera in glowering silence while Roger beckoned me to him. In case you haven't noticed, John's a bit OTT today, so forget the one take and just relax. And by the way, he broke into a laugh. What you said sounded a hell of a lot better than the script. Obviously, I've never forgotten his kindness and compassion for a fellow actor. I did relax, and the rest of the filming went off without another glitch. No thanks to John Gilling. At lunch one day toward the end of the shoot, Roger told me that Gilling had learned his disdain for actresses at the hand of the master, Alfred Hitchcock. Gilling got his start as Hitchcock's assistant, and he told Roger, with apparent glee, of the time the director was working with a young actress who fluffed a line. Hitchcock called, "Cut!" and then turned to Gilling and told him to fetch a copy of Spotlight, the casting directory, so he could recast the actress immediately. When she broke into tears, Hitchcock said, "Well, you should cry, my girl, wasting our time like that." Cruel as he was, Gilling was no Hitchcock when it came to talent. And that was my introduction to Roger, who would become my dear friend for more than 50 years. He was a man completely without side, who understood and taught me that a laugh always won the day over anger. I went on to guest lead in 5 more episodes of The Saint, many more than any other actress. When I asked Roger why, he said, "Well, no one else combined good acting with his same sense of humor." True enough, often to the exasperation of our producer, Bob Baker. With absolutely no sense of shame, Roger and I traded infantile practical jokes and used spare time to have joke-telling marathons, which Roger always won, hands down. That's it.
Genius. All right, come on in. As you can tell, the assembly. I mean, Amy, you've got to be taken by that, and thank the Lord that we moved on a little bit, hopefully, in our dealings with respect to actresses in the industry.
Well, absolutely. I wondered if I could ask Annette about her title. I mean, it was lovely to hear the extracts and really great, but I was wondering if she could say a bit more about her title and why she...
Yes. I've no idea. It just came out.
It finally got there. For someone who has professed terminal shyness, Annette André has written her memoir with arresting honesty and generosity. From a lonely childhood in Sydney, Australia, and overcoming a chronic illness to become a professional ballet dancer, Where Have I Been All My Life reveals the truth behind her storybook romance with a famous bullfighter, how Benny Hill proposed marriage, and why a chance conversation with Prince Charles helped to change the course of her life. If that doesn't get you actually sort of shelling out the whole thing, I do not know what will.
It sounds good that way, doesn't it?
It does. I want to come to a book signing so I can get your autograph at the same time.
We will work through that whole sort of sequence, basically, and a whole heap of other goodies we'll be working through. Will it be available to put? Is it available to purchase, Annette? What's the system, and how do people actually get hold of Where Have I Been All My Life? The book.
Where do you do it? Is it what you said?
How do we purchase the book, Annette?
You go to.
We'll put it out on the details. You can send us the link. We'll put it up there. Don't worry, it's technology.
I'll send it to you. I'll email it to you,
and I'll spread the word. That's the important thing. Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
Oh yes. Wonderful. But it always is. I always have fun. I come away laughing.
Well, you know, fundamentally, I feel, Annette, the reason we do these weekly shows is to keep you happy. That's important. Then yourself and Arthur Weingarten. I mean, that's the sort of focus on the whole thing. I like to think of sometimes we might have a smidge of amusement from the Langhorns in Brighton, but they hardly ever listen to the show, so what the heck. Anyway, life continues. What's the next question, Phil Hamlin-Williams, we need to put to Annette?
Well, it is. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
She has. She's answered
that. Oh, well, yes, I have.
What's the next one? Let's move on.
Will you be talking to us again very soon?
I will, but it may not be very soon because I'm going to be in London and quite busy. I come to London on the 12th of September, and I'm going to be there until early December. But I think I'm going to be quite busy.
Are you working, Annette? What are you doing? What are you doing?
No, well, I've got a couple of some appearances to do, and There will be some interviews and things like that for the book, you know.
We will speak, Annette. We will talk again. We'll connect various other bits and pieces. Though, I mean, I know, Phil, you're very keen to actually say, let's bring her up to Lincoln.
We've got to tempt you to Lincoln.
Exactly.
Yeah. We really have.
She has been here once before, of course.
I certainly will try. I have to see what my schedule's like. I don't know. My agent's got that in hand.
It'll happen. It'll happen, Annette. I know it will. That's the important thing. Positivity all the way.
That's good.
Have you ever been down? Have you ever been lost? Have you ever been found? Have you
right? Have you ever been wrong? Have you come up short? Can you come along? Have you left your mark? Have you left the law? Have you seen the way? That's what we live. Short stories, they just take what they will do. Short stories, that's all it's ever been. Don't worry about the ending, take the fall. That's behind the rain. I have felt the joy that's behind the pain. Did you ever go soft? Did you ever run wild? I've been 100 years old. I've been a newborn child. And I have found a smile in the midst of tears. And I can find a heart. You know, I need you near me. All my happy ending's gone, and I see now so very clearly that our story must go on. Myself, can I ask for you to forgive your hope? Can we make it through? You know I need a dream, just like I need my breath. We've got to take the life before we get to death.
Brilliant singer-songwriter Harry Chapin with Short Stories. You're listening to Siren FM.
Very good, Malcolm. I can tell a professional is in the house. It's marvellous. Not that I'm sort of actually casting aspersions at Phil, Amy, or indeed Florence, but you know, it's experience. Just sort of boil the thing out there. In Jurassic Park, which character is dressed entirely in black?
Oh, is it that ridiculous doctor chap?
That ridiculous doctor chap?
That one, yeah, that...
Do you think that the person who's actually has a
Jeff
theme...
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, what do you think Tom Piercy, Chief Executive Officer and founder of YorkMaze.com, which this year has the ultimate Jurassic Park as its theme?
Indeed, and it was. It was Jeff Goldblum dressed in black, playing the character...
Yes.
Mathematician?
Yes. Ian, yes.
Ian.
Think of Mr. Tomlinson's first name. See, he hasn't read the schedule either. It's Ian Malcolm, obviously. Mathematician Ian Malcolm. Yeah, exactly. So I presume that the quiz questions that you're putting together as we wander around the maze in about 48 hours from now will be probably of a similar line, because I've been boning up on my... I did the Jurassic Park world there. Sorry, boning up. Sometimes.
Actually, Alex, they're all dinosaur names.
Oh, so you mean to say that watching all five Jurassic Park movies, including Do You Think I Saw Us? No, it's a use of reference into... That's not going to help at all, so they're all dinosaur names.
You should be delving into your...
Are we talking ichthyosaurs? Are we talking paleontologists? Yeah. Are we talking triceratops?
We've got Spinosaurus out there, we've got ankylosaurs, we've got... there's all sorts of lurking in the maze this year.
So one has to share the question, because Malcolm, I don't think you've ever been to the York Maze, have you? Even though you're a North Yorkshire lad.
Well, East Yorkshire lad, actually, Alex. But I'm literally 30 minutes, maybe 35, from the York Maze. And I just thought, oh, it's just a load of bushes that you get lost in the middle of. Obviously not.
And so I think you have to have a right of reply with respect to that, Tom. Yeah, I mean, I think in all the years I've been working with Tom Piercy, ever since the maze was actually at the start of the 21st century, just a load of bushes is probably... this is award-winning. It's the largest maze in Europe. It's phenomenal.
I'm sure this allows me to use the phrase we use in our marketing. There's only 20 rides, shows and attractions.
Exactly. Exactly so. So let's because Amy, have you ever been to the York Maze?
I haven't, but I've recently had a daughter, mm-hmm. And as she gets bigger, I'm looking for other places to go. I find myself at all kinds of venues at the weekends now that I never considered before. So I imagine there's quite a lot going on for children at the York Maze, is there?
Children and adults.
Indeed, it's all about families, really. Children and grown-ups. I like to get all the grown-ups involved in all the activities. No shirking.
Indeed. Let's turn to Florence Langhorne. Florence, have you ever been in a maze?
I went in a couple of mazes at Hever Castle. Do you know where that is? Lived there.
Like beaver, but a different kind of pronunciation, really. I mean, spelling, I believe. Surely it should be Belvoir, not beaver, but there we are.
Yes, but having looked at the website and the sort of amazing pictures you have up there, it seems like something I would have absolutely loved. And still would, actually, but is it appropriate to hang out at an adventure park at 21? Probably not. It's so much fun, honestly. It looks amazing.
York Maze is famous for the giant maze, the largest in Europe, but we also boast many other curious maze-based attractions for you to puzzle over. There's the giant maze, as we mentioned. There's the Jurassic Maze, and we can actually see the Jurassic images that are actually cut into the maze, which means that some folk actually take a photograph of the Jurassic Maze to actually help them navigate around the whole system. I know it can happen. It's using the technology to work your way through that process. How's it been? How's the summer been for yourself, Tom Piercy?
It's been very good, actually. Very good. The dinosaur scene has come down incredibly well. Everyone loves dinosaurs, don't they? I love dinosaurs. That's why we ended up doing the Jurassic Maze. We've got full-size replica dinosaurs lurking around the maze, statues rather than real ones. And we've got those fantastic velociraptor costumes that actually people climb inside and they have a television screen inside so they can see what they're doing. A bit like I had on, have you ever seen the show Walking with Dinosaurs?
We love Walking with Dinosaurs. It's just and of course you've got Primeval. You've got so many sort of maze things there. It's going to be fantastic. We're looking forward to seeing you on Friday for our usual annual trip. I shall actually, in the light of Malcolm's slightly cursory, I just thought it was a bunch of Malcolm. If you're free on Friday, come and join us. We're having a little adventure.
I'd love to.
My mission is to try and get Alex inside the Velociraptor costume.
Yeah.
I've told you before, Tom, your personal fantasy life sometimes has to be put aside from professional broadcasting. Otherwise, I don't do the Velociraptor costume for just anybody. It's like, I'm not performing Seal, my boy.
Can we see the pictures, Tom? Put them up online. When you've prized him in there, put them up online.
I've got images of myself in a pink tutu up there somewhere as well, which, but that wasn't at the Maze, actually. That was the Yorkshire. Anyway, I'm actually giving up, the ultimate sacrifice, I'm giving up my annual trip to the horse trials at Burley just to check out the York Maze this year, because I feel it's time we actually get priorities.
Well done. Yeah,
there we are.
And we'll be... I'll make sure you get a front row seat at Maisie and Willie's Get Lost show.
I could have sworn you actually said make sure you got a front row seat there at Maisie and Who's Bot show?
Willie's Get Lost show.
Maisie and Willie Get Lost.
They're a bit like the Crankies. They're a mother and daughter combination.
Right.
Maisie and Willie. Their surname is Get Lost.
Well, I suppose one has to take the acting work where one can find it these days. So, well done, Maisie and Willie. We will connect with you again very soon, Tom. We'll see you on Friday. I'm sure it'll be fantastic. We've got Sue Rice and her daughter Bridget coming along, and also Lauren Wood, who might join us still today. I don't know. What can I say, Florence? I mean, obviously, Lauren and Tessa have been so amazed by the fact... No, amazed. Just have to call. I'll introduce you electronically. It'll all happen. Still to come on the programme today, more news about the Lincoln Book Festival. We've got... Malcolm in Art. I'll say that again. Malcolm in Art in a play, which again we'll be checking out in the very near future and is well worth visiting. We've got Sally Barker, we've got Pip Stewart and Phil Leonis. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today? Tom Piercy.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to hosting you all on
Friday. Someone that I know. Flashing lights are fading into the falling snow. Another dark, wet night, another life at risk, and I can't live with this. I can't live with this. You can't help who you love. The pull comes from inside. It's the heart that leads the head, not the head that can decide. I was smitten with desire for the flame inside your eyes. Why then do I cry? Why do I cry? You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a but the risk is worth a life. You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth saving a life. Last night I heard the sirens, a chill ran through my bones. Vowed this was the last time I would bear the fear alone. Collected my belongings, there wasn't much to pack, and I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back. You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth a life. You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth saving a life. Like the maidens of the war,
comes from inside. It's the heart that leads the head, not the head that can decide. I was smitten with desire for the flame inside your eyes. Why then do I cry? Why do I cry? You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth a life. Is worth a life. You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth a life. You said you'd follow fire until the day you die. You knew there was a danger, but the risk is worth saving a life.
Soon to be performing actually at Musicport, it's the fabulous Sally Barker singing Sirens there on Siren Radio. Welcome, Sally Barker. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You see, a polite singer. It's always very good. A round of applause for Sally Barker, please. Welcome to the Midweek Drive. And Sally, you're going to be performing in all manner of routines in the very near future. But in the words of Tom Jones, frankly, when you've listened to Sally Barker, then frankly, you know, the rest of the world can just... It just goes quiet for a time, really. Sally, share with us the range of things that you've actually been involved with, because in a few moments we're going to actually have a listen to your duet with Tom Jones. In fact, actually, Florence, you've actually seen Sally perform this particular aspect.
I have, and it was beautiful. It was so amazing. I really enjoyed it, and I was just so interested in. Well, I'm sure you could talk a bit about it. But, what it's like, sort of getting to do something as big as sort of sing with Tom Jones. I mean,
Sir Tom Jones.
Sir Tom Jones, exactly. And what it's like working.
As he likes
with
to
him.
Say, Tom Jones, for the moment.
And just what it's like working with him and being involved with him. I mean, how much time did you get to sort of spend sessions? Did he mentor you sort of a lot, or just, yeah, I mean, just what was it like with Tom Jones, really? That's all I can ask.
Well, I have to say that at the very beginning of the whole process, I wasn't particularly interested in being part of that sort of programme, but my kids wanted me to have a go at it.
So go on, Mum, you can do it, they were saying. Go on.
They were big fans of the show, so I had a go at it, and I thought, oh, well, you know, if I don't like it, I can just leave. And then when I got through the blind auditions, and Tom had been very tearful, I said, well, I can just leave if I don't like it. But then as I got further on into the program, I thought, oh dear, I don't think I'll be able to just leave. But as the program went along, and as I got through the different rounds, I had more and more contact with Tom Jones. And then I think it was halfway through that process. Because the first three sections of it are filmed. So you know that you've got a halfway, if you like. And then there's the live shows. Well, I think at the beginning of the first live show, we were running through things, and Tom sidled up to me and he said to me, oh, how far do you want to go in this?
Steady. We don't want to go too far down the Tom Jones sidling up to your good self. How far do you want to go indeed, please?
And he said to me that, and I said, well, I'd really like to sing a duet with you, Tom. Tommy. And he said, well, you'll have to get into the last programme, into the final, to do that. And I said, well, that's what I'll try and do. And that's actually what I did. But along the way, I got quite a lot of contact with Tom, and we would sit and chat, actually, a great deal of the time. The song choices, some of the songs were chosen for me, but a lot of the songs I had a say in what songs I was going to sing, and there was discussion about it. And there was obviously discussion with Tom and his management, because that's his team. And I generally got to basically sing what I wanted to sing. Tom would say, well, let her sing what she wants to sing. Yeah. So I had quite a lot of support. I also had mentoring from him, not in a specific way as in this is how you sing it, because I think he respected the fact that I was a singer of long standing. But he did also give me some cues and some advice at different times. But he did it in a quite a subtle way, but in a way that I totally understood and understood why he was saying the things he was saying.
For me, it was just full of emotion. It was just so beautiful that I couldn't help myself. You swept me off my feet. The words of TJ himself, not Hooker, but Tom Jones. Sometimes easily confused. Sally, happy to stay with us while we actually listen to that awesome time where you actually take on board the song that Cher has attempted to do justice to, the song that Cher's about the whole notion of Elvis and walking in Memphis. Are you ready for this, Sally Barker?
Yeah. Is it with Tom?
It is with Tom, actually.
Okay, cool.
Here you both come. Excellent stuff. Marvellous. What say you, Malcolm?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Sally, can I ask, you know, when you're making like a programme like The Voice, are you aware more that it's a singing competition, or are you aware that it's more of making a television entertainment programme?
Definitely the second. And in fact, I think I was aware from the very beginning that it's an entertainment programme, and the singing is something that happens on the programme.
Right.
I don't know how else I can explain it to you. It's interesting hearing that version because it's obviously you have to cut quite a bit out, and that's a long song, so quite a lot was cut out of it.
Can't have it more than 3 minutes, otherwise, you know, disaster. You know, Kylie's going to stop doing the cutaways. Will I Am could have a fit. Could be disaster.
So it is odd to hear, and actually, I don't do that many songs from The Voice in my set, but obviously people want to hear them, so I do. And I've only just started singing Walking in Memphis in my set, For some reason, I needed to put it to one side. Maybe because I missed Tom, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Tom might turn up at the hut in Gothland on the 1st of September. You never know.
We can only put out the
exactly. We've put that. Tom, if you want to maintain your credibility, get yourself up to the hut in Gothland. It's got a great railway featured on Heartbeat.
Love to see him there.
Saturday, the 1st of September. Tickets are mere £12. Unbelievable. Overnight camping, £5 per pitch. 7:30 p.m. start. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a chance to see Sally Barker in present, Musicport presenting. And Sally, will you be performing at Musicport in Whitby later on this year as well?
I haven't been asked this year.
Unbelievable.
But hopefully next year.
I'm going to have words with Mr. McLaughlin now and said, are you insane? I mean, you know, you stunned, literally stunned the Musicport Festival crowd last October. But at the moment, though, if you want to see Sally Barker, the hut, Gothland. Sally, presumably your website remains sallybarker.co.uk?
Yes, please.
Would you like Walk On By or Another Train, both of which sung by yourself?
Oh, gosh. I don't know how you could give me that.
Well, I just have, you know. There we are.
Come on. How can you do that to me?
I could have thrown in the river, but I thought, no, we'll go with Walk On By or Another Train. Where are you going to go?
I'd say Another Train, actually.
Very good choice, because in the very near future, for another 10 or so minutes, Florence will be leaving on another train. Yeah, I did that. Sally, obviously reading the script. Marvellous.
How could I know? I must have known.
Indeed. Sally, a round of applause for Sally Barker. We'll see you again very soon.
Thanks. Say you lost your chance and fate brought you defeat, but that means nothing. You look so sad. You've been listening to those who say you've missed your chance. There's another train. There always is. Maybe the next one is yours. Get up and climb aboard another train. You feel you're done. There's no such thing. Although you're standing on your own breath is king, the beginning is now. Don't turn around, regrets and bad mistakes will only drain you. There's another train, there always is, maybe the next one is yours. Get up and climb aboard another train. We crawl in the dark sometimes, we think too much. Then we fill our heads with crazy things that only break our hearts. And I know you've seen what the earth can do when it's dragging down another load of worrisome fools. There's another train, there always is. Maybe the next one is yours. Get up and climb aboard another train. I know it's hard when you feel confused. You can crown yourself with fear, and you feel you cannot move. You're building worlds that don't exist. Imagination makes the worst dreams. There's another train, there always is. Maybe the next one is yours. Get up and climb aboard, there's another train. There always is, maybe the next one is yours. Get up and climb aboard, there's another train. There always is.
And time means we have to just move on phenomenally, apart from saying Penny Evans, well done. Sally has a great voice, love that rendition of Cher's Walking in Memphis with Tom Jones. She likes this one too. Well done, Penny Evans, our Derbyshire correspondent there, listening to the programme and hopefully enjoying it in her own magical way. When we talk about superheroes, superheroines and so on, The name, to me, of Philippa Stewart will be way up there as a real-life superhero, superheroine extraordinaire. She's just phenomenal in many ways. Philippa, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. I'll be sharing your video, Reflections from the Amazon, from your showreel with Florence earlier this afternoon. I think it's fair to say, Florence, you were blown away, really, with things that were happening there.
Unbelievable. I mean, I cannot imagine doing anything like that myself. I mean, I'm so not... It just blows my mind, honestly. I'm just so interested in all the adventures you've done and experiences you've had. I mean, what's like the scariest sort of experience or adventure you've had, do you think?
Oh, guys, thanks. Do you know what? I think it was probably my most recent trip to Guyana. It was absolutely terrifying in a sense that we were trying to hike to a source of a river called the Essequibo. And we were planning on paddling from source to sea. It was the world first. But on the way to this source, I essentially got my foot wedged between a log and a dead vine. And as I wiggled it out, there was a snake underneath. And it wasn't just any snake. It was called the Labaria snake, which is one of the most deadly snakes in the jungle. Next thing I knew, one of our guides had whipped out his machete and sort of hacked it to death. And essentially said that if that had bitten me, it would have killed me. So that was probably the scariest thing that's happened along my adventures. But more recently as well, I picked up something called leishmaniasis, which is a flesh-eating parasite, also from Guyana. And I'm currently in treatment for that. So forgive me if I'm a bit slow or my brain's fogging, but it's quite an intense treatment, 21 days on an IV. So I'm sort of here, but sort of not, if you know what I mean.
Pip, you've just actually manifested the true courage that a Midweek Drive act needs to demonstrate. And that's the kind of standard routine. Don't be put off by a flesh-eating parasite. Don't be worried about any of those sort of scenarios. You cycled along Brazil's Trans-Amazonian Highway. You've lived with indigenous communities in Peru. You've paddled Guyana's Essequibo River from source to sea, as we've just heard. And indeed, you've also, on a more serious note, seen firsthand the destructive nature of modernity. Just have a little flavour of this, which we talked about last week, of course, because I think if ever Florence needs to actually take something back to Brighton with her, it's, of course, how do you successfully actually summon a cow?
Can you tell me how you'd call the cow? Can you show us?
Hey! Hey! Oh! I'm going to try. Oh! No reaction. Oh, no, honestly. You give it a try. See how many heads you can turn. Go on.
Okay. I feel very cowgirl right now.
Now, I think before we go into Pip in her cowgirl moment there, of course, great stuff there, I think, Philippa, would you like us in the studio collectively to try and do that summoning of a cow?
I would love that. I'd like to see the cows of the UK herding your way.
This is important sort of thing. I mean, we are in a rural county, so I think we've managed to get that whole thing down. So
you need to lead it, Alex.
With gusto and positivity.
Oh, God, there's thundering at
you. Yeah, that's what it's all about. Now, together...
The stampede is coming your way.
Well, I feel it's getting in touch with nature. That's important. We are getting in touch with wilderness if he actually connects via Skype in a few moments as well. Who knows? The channels are open. Philippa, this, as I say, this tour you're actually doing at present is very much in association with the Royal Geographical Society, and it's great stuff. As we said, when will you be coming to Lincoln? Because I feel actually, Phil Hamlin Williams, we need to feature Pip Stewart at the Lincoln Drill Hall in the near future.
I think she needs to be there, absolutely.
So there we are. That's the challenge. Have you been to Lincoln, Pip, before? Because I know we've done...
You know what? I haven't. Isn't that shameful? I feel like I need to address the situation.
You do. It is the home of great explorers.
Yeah. Well, Joseph Banks, at least.
Absolutely.
who in my upcoming paper that I'll be delivering for the Discover Middlesbrough, it's there somewhere in the northeast, comparing James T. Cook with James Kirk, or James T. Kirk with James Cook. Interesting line, though. it would be developed in all sorts of ways. But, Pippa, yes, clearly after you've done the Amazon, we clearly need to, after Trans-Amazonian Highway, Lincoln should hopefully be a piece of cake. Although, I don't know. I mean, Florence...
Might be your deadly snake.
I can surely do it. Exactly. We're talking, of course, Tuesday the 6th of November. We'll hopefully be seeing you at the Darlington Hippodrome. Tickets are maybe just £13. Discounts £12 from that point of view. You can access details from that point of view. ecotourism, something that was shared as something which people could say, and I know this is something where Phil Leonis has talked about this on Chilpack Hollywood, the notion of ecotourism as being a new paradigm shift in how sustainability can be brought to areas like the Amazon, which otherwise are kind of ruining the lungs of our planet.
Absolutely. That was the thing on this journey that I did in Brazil and Peru. We looked at all sorts of issues, from the gold mining, deforestation, soya plantations, cattle ranching. And it was quite depressing, if I'm honest, because when you're cycling past burning trees or you're kind of paddling along and suddenly you see these gold mines in the middle of the rivers, you can begin to lose hope a little bit. But we met some really inspiring people doing amazing work in ecotourism. And essentially, my little philosophy is, I think if we can make a business case out of conservation, that has to be the future of the Amazon, in a sense. And I've got more questions than I have answers, to be honest, Alex. So this is what I'm really looking forward to on the speaking tour, is to kind of talk to the people in the audience as well, because I think, you know, the public must have so many good ideas. I've got lots of questions, and together I'm sure we can come up with something substantial. So, yeah, I think ecotourism is one part of the solution, but I'm sure there must be other ideas as well.
Let's go straight over to Los Angeles and open up channels, etc., and say welcome, Phil Leonis, to the programme. We've missed you for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Which is really touching, considering 2 weeks ago I was on the show. Don't miss me when I'm here, Alex. And there's nothing also more touching than hearing that the channels are open while at that moment Skype is telling me Alex Lefchuk is offline. So it's the contradictory signals that you give me that keep me coming back for more, Alex.
Got to treat him mean to keep him keen, Phil. You know, that's the bottom line. Anyway, sorry, Phil. Carry on.
As you know, we discussed ecotourism on Chilpack Hollywood Hour this week. Dean is exploring his bucket list down under before he moves back from Sydney, Australia. And ecotourism was a big thing that we touched upon, but also the larger theme, which is we live at a time that I think is very exciting, where you are capable of convincing not only individuals, but corporations that it is in their financial best interests to actually do the right thing now.
Pippa, does that chime with yourself? I mean, can we look forward with optimism to the future?
Do you know what? Yes, I think we can, because the alternative is pretty bleak otherwise. And I think more and more businesses are starting to realise this. And I think there's probably a fine line between things like greenwashing and actual substantial change. And I think if there's enough public pressure, then businesses and governments genuinely do try and change. But I think that what we're seeing with the plastics at the moment, that's huge in the media. And I'd love to see the same thing being done for the gold mining industry, because until I was on the ground, until I saw the destruction firsthand, I had no idea how pernicious that industry was. And that was a real shock for me on this whole journey, was, you know, the things that I consume, it gave me real pause for thought, everything from, you know, soya to beef to gold. And I think it's maybe a responsibility on us as well to look at the choices that we're making a little bit more closely too.
Well, I mean, the truth is that an economy that is based upon renewal rather than exploitation is an economy that is financially far more sound, that is far more secure, that includes more people and has a far greater range for development than one that is based on exploitation, no matter the field.
Absolutely. And if we continue ravaging the planet at the rate we're going, we're not going to have a planet. So on a very real practical survival basis, there is a need for us to protect.
But that argument doesn't work. That argument doesn't work, because there are certainly in this country a great deal of people that, well, that's future generations' problem. That's not ours. And we are not going to leave money on the table. And for those people, you have to make the argument you can make more money doing the right thing than you can doing the same way that you've always done. And that has started to transform corporations. It's still greed. It's just that their greed leads them in the right direction now. Greed can work to our advantage as long as greed is not combined with short-sightedness.
Mm-hmm. And I think I love that. And what gives me a shed load of hope is actually, you know, I talk a lot about all of this stuff on social media, And actually, I think it is the younger generation, the millennials, Gen Z and things like that, that are really taken with the idea of preserving this planet and making it a better place. So I think the up-and-coming generations have a real passion for conservation. So I don't know. I think the tide is turning, and I completely agree with what you're saying about making businesses kind of on board with this all as well, and that the tide is turning. So there is reason to be optimistic.
Okay,
sure.
Momentarily then, Florence Langhorne, youngest person in the studio. You've heard what Pip said. Clearly, it's on you. You clearly have this sort of responsibility. I mean, in 2013, Pip cycled home from Malaysia to London. So at least you have to cycle back to Brighton, hopefully.
I feel like I should now.
It's just that inspiration.
Yep.
Any questions, observations you'd like to share with either Phil or Pip?
I mean, what would you recommend the best thing we can, someone maybe of my, 21, younger could start
First class
doing?
Honours degree in music, fantastic violinist, all round wonderful
no,
person.
I don't know about things like, I don't know, exercise and doing things for the environment necessarily. So what's sort of the best thing, how could you educate people who maybe don't know the best way to sort of be more eco-friendly? What would you recommend?
From my point of view, I just say get out and do more in the world, because I think when you spend time in wild places, there's an incredible benefit, not only physically, but also emotionally. And I think the reason I love adventure so much is it connects you to yourself, other people and the world around you. And when you've kind of been in those environments, you want to protect them. You don't want to leave rubbish around. You want to pick things up. You kind of want to make your community a better place. And I think it's almost starting small, isn't it? It's starting with what you can control in your community, and sort of start spreading those messages. And it's amazing if you have an idea and you tell someone else that idea and then they spread it, how quickly ideas can travel. So I'd say just, first of all, get out, go for a walk, go outside, move your body. You'll feel better in mind, body and soul. And then beyond that, just sort of look at your consumption and really ask, like, how many trainers do you need? How many pairs of shoes and outfits and things like that? Because actually, when I was doing my cycle ride, I have everything that I needed in 4 panniers on my bag. And I came back to my wardrobe when I got home after 13 months and I opened it in dismay, because I'm like, I have got so many clothes. I do not need this many clothes. And it was kind of a bit of a life edit as well, which was really interesting. It was quite a cathartic exercise as well.
And
go on.
and so do you think that this a large part of this sort of education and doing and starting with the small things and then working your way up, do you think a lot of it has to do with people starting to teach these things in schools, so that you're sort of learning these things at a young age, so that you know
Absolutely.
More how to do it when you're older and know the best way to start?
It's like
these
your
easy
mum
steps.
Inspiring people in Brighton, really. I think that's great. That's an enthusiasm.
I do think it starts with children, but there's a brilliant Attenborough quote. Obama asked him, he did an interview with Attenborough, and he said, "When did you find your love of nature?" And Attenborough replied to him, "When did you lose it?" And it's so true. If you watch kids outside, they just love it. They're so natural in that environment. And I think actually of all of us, children sort of are most attuned to the benefits of nature. And it's how we nurture that as adults, and we kind of grow into this consumerist society. But you're bang right. We've got to start with the children. We've got to start with education. And I think it's just instilling a sense of compassion in the world, really, that what I do will impact you. It will impact your children. It will impact future generations. And we're all interlinked. And I think that's what, these long distance journeys that I've done have shown me, is that regardless of whatever country, race, religion you're from, we all live on this planet and we all need to protect it.
We're going to hold momentarily. Philippa, if you're kind enough to stay with us for a few seconds, because I know that Florence has to head off to the wild blue yonder of the railway station, together with the mum, and travel all the way through the hell of London. And I know that. I mean, I love the line that you actually put on your website, Pip. I currently live and work in London. I'm usually plotting an escape. Go for it, my girl. That's important. Yes. You'll be back to Brighton. But Phil Leonis, would you like to bowl those last two questions from Los Angeles to Florence Langhorne, who has basically done everybody proud, I think, in Brighton and in the region today on her first debut as far as the midweek drive is concerned. And as our mum would say, it's a pretty traumatic time. Anyway, Phil Leonis, over to you, please.
Brighton, one of my favorite places on earth, seriously could not be more proud of its favorite daughter, Florence. Did you enjoy your telephonic link with us this evening, or your appearance on the midweek drive?
I have. I've enjoyed every moment. Thank you so much. Thanks for letting me ask questions on the show and get involved.
Can we look forward to you returning in the near future?
Thank you. Lovely to speak to everyone and you.
I think that was a kind of yes, actually. It was sort of bold. You know, what do you think, Malcolm?
So, in Brighton, that passes as a yes.
That's yay! Absolutely.
Thank you.
Your final photo shoot. Malcolm, it's time for you to introduce your daughter now. Oh. And that would be Eleanor Tomlinson with The Wild Mountainside, which is possibly a theme for Pip as she continues on her adventures.
I've listened to this, Pip. You'll love it. It's a little old Scottish folk ballad, but it's gorgeous. It's my daughter, Eleanor Tomlinson, singing.
So what say you, Pip Stewart? Would that actually help gather the whole themes as we talk over the last few seconds? Sorry, Malcolm, but time is so tight today. What did you make of Eleanor Tomlinson, please, Pip Stewart?
Oh, amazing. What a voice.
Oh.
Well, that's Philippa Stewart's view, which is obviously to be taken on board, but the key aspect is clearly Phil Innes in Los Angeles, because these Americans, they can make or break entire careers. She might well have the lead role in Poldark. She might well have been in Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging. She might have been touted as the next Keira Knightley. But Phil Innes, what did you make of Eleanor Tomlinson and her fine little ditty there?
Alex, there are so many things we can do to help heal this planet and heal our bodies in the process, but none of them is more important or more impactful than tuning into the Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition every week. And Eleanor Tomlinson just exemplified why that is true.
Oh, yeah. I think I can go on my tombstone as well, actually.
And a lovely warm glow now.
So you should. Okay, a few moments left. A reminder that Philippa Stewart, are you getting better, Pip? That's the important thing. Is it a case, because, I mean, we were worried about you over the last couple of weeks, and clearly we want to make you a regular contributor for the whole sort of package, but do you feel better, or is it still a case of that darn flesh-eating...
No, unfortunately, I think the drugs accumulate in the body, so the last few days are meant to be very, very painful. So I'm sort of in that pain cave at the moment, but I finish on Monday... They can zap the thing. My scab fell off yesterday, Alex, so that's good.
Well, when your scab's fallen off, that's all we need.
So I assume that that's healing my neck. So, yeah, no, I think I'm on the mend, and I will be bang
how
up.
How many scabs did you have?
I had a huge one on my neck. Oh. And the danger is that it can get into your nose and your soft palate, and then it can disfigure you permanently. So it's a huge neglected tropical disease, and I'm trying to raise as much awareness as I can, because, again, it's another issue of deforestation, that a lot of these vector-borne parasites and diseases happen in areas of deforestation. So, yeah, in a way, it's kind of epitomizes what I'm going to talk about in my entire talk. So it's kind of quite a good little PR piece, really,
Philippa, if we can help, that's the important thing.
Thank you.
Philinus, would you like to put those final two questions to Philippa Stewart, please? And I know you should be checking out philippastewart.com, who should be appearing in the next edition of the Chilpack Hollywood Hour, I feel certain. Carry on.
Sorry, I'm a little bit thrown by the visual images. Okay. What a pip of a story that was. Pip, have you enjoyed your telephonic link here on the Midweek Drive today?
You know, it's been brilliant. Thank you, guys. Lovely to chat.
And can we look forward to you checking in with us again in the near future?
Absolutely.
Hey, round of applause for Pip Stewart. Woo! And with a few seconds to actually go, Malcolm, would you like to share with us how people can see you in performance, in art, in the very, very near future, in what should surely be a live event of the week if only Dean Haglund, on his route from Australia to Detroit, can actually be persuaded to stop off in East Yorkshire?
Well, it's on for 3.5 weeks, Alex.
There you are.
That's good news.
Right. Yeah, well, as a pre-honeymoon for Phil and Lily, really.
What could be better? Exactly. Yeah, it's a play called Art. It's by Yasmina Retsa. It's been on the West End, translated by Christopher Hampton, directed by Martin Hudson, and it's on at the East Riding Theatre, professional little theatre in my town in Beverley in East Yorkshire. We open on the 27th of September, and we play to the 20th of October. So come along, everybody, if you can.
And back to the Lincoln Book Festival, please, Phil Hamlin, a few sort of final routines about where can people go to find out details about the Lincoln Literary Festival Revolutions.
So we do have our brand new website, lincolnbookfestival.com. Everything is there. Just one person I want to talk about, because you interviewed John Robb.
I did.
John Robb is appearing with Mark Mulholland.
History of Punk Music.
Was John Robb's.
Exactly.
Mark Mulholland, however, is talking about revolution. He's picking up from the French Revolution, or the Second French Revolution, and working through to The Murderer of Warren Street. Oh. A true story of a 19th century revolutionary.
Sounds like the kind of movie that Phil Lynn should be making.
This man is Professor of Modern History at St Catherine's College, Oxford.
Can't get better than that, can it, Amy?
No, it sounds great. And it shows what a great theme revolution is, I think, that it can encompass both punk and a history
Absolutely.
Of the French Revolution in the
same...
Know.
Same breath. Exactly.
Turn the page.
Well, of course. I mean, that's why when writing about revolution, John Lennon wrote, "You can count me out in," because exactly. It encompasses all of it.
Absolutely.
And on that bombshell, we have to say, Philip, are you still there, by the way?
I am.
Yeah,
here.
I don't think this is good. See, constant professional, you see, he's there, waiting for that final little farewell and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Phil Linus, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today from Los Angeles? And how are the wedding preparations going?
About the same. I mean, my feelings about the wedding preparations are kind of the same feelings I had listening to a story about scabs falling.
Well, you got until February next year, the day before President's Day, so it says seismic routine. Still, actually, I should show you, Malcolm, my invitation to the Leonis and Hollyman wedding.
Is it Phil getting married himself?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think that was the idea.
I wasn't sure if it was...
He's not marrying himself, he's marrying Billy Hollyman.
I wasn't sure if it was various offspring of his that might be getting married.
No, it's Phil himself. I think that's correct, isn't it, Phil Leonis? Getting married yourself?
Does your intended know you regard her as being a scab?
Lily, please. Yes. Lord. As ever, Malcolm sometimes puts the finger on the pulse. Or the scab. Of course. It's a whole new world. Phil, have you enjoyed the show? Are you back again with us next week when we have the return of head chef Aaron Craig joining us?
Who can make plans that far in advance?
Well, there you have it. Thanks to Anna Lewis, William Coles, Liv Austin, Annette Andre, Tom Piercy, Sally Barker, clearly Pip Stewart and Phil Leonis and Rosemary Langhorne and Florence Langhorne. Thank you, dear listener, for taking part in the whole production. Amy, have you enjoyed it?
It's been great. Thanks, Alex.
Excellent. See you again in about a decade.
Five more years.
Yes. I think Mrs. Thatcher just said the same thing, but never mind. Life continues. Phil, we'll be back again very soon because we've got lots of other stuff to actually talk about. That. Malcolm, enjoy being back.
Yeah, loved it. It'd be great
Good.
To be back, Alex.
That's pretty much it. What would you like us to say for your final farewell, Philippa Stewart? I mean, what would be a case of reflections on the Amazon, or should we just go out with that call for cows? What would you like for the final piece?
Yeah, come see me at the Darlington on the 6th of November with the Royal Geographical Society, and I want to hear your ideas, your views. I think the more conversations we can have, the better. So, yes, let's start that conversation.
It'll be fantastic, and let's go after three. Hopefully Phil Leonis was listening to the programme when we were doing this, so... Oh.